Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Leader of American terrorist training camp found insane. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist, and your terrorist therapist. I know. What did I say, right? Leader of American terrorist training camp found insane. Now, first of all, the leader was a woman. Bet you didn't believe that, expect that. And what am I talking about? Well, the news, you know, why this is in the news again is because of a woman who was the leader of this pack of five extremists, Islamic extremists, radical Islamists, made a training camp in the desert of New Mexico. Do you remember this story? This occurred in August of 2018 that they discovered the camp. Well, they knew about it before, but that they raided the camp. And so first let me tell you about why this is in the news now, about this woman being found insane, mentally unfit to stand trial, exactly. And so this is bringing back this whole case, which, by the way, is going to be the five members of this team are going to be put on trial in April 2020. At least that's the plan now. And so in regard to this plan, that's how the judge decided that Janie LeVay, actually she's from Haiti, and the judge decided, you know, apparently there was evidence, they were all in jail, and so apparently there was evidence that she was mentally ill. And the judge decided to hospitalize her so that she could be made competent to stand trial before the trial in April. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about her, and then I'll go back to revisit this whole New Mexico training camp discovery case and tell you more about that. And when I remind you about the case, the reason why this case was so memorable, I'm pretty sure if you're listening to this, you remember this case, because, I mean, first of all, it involved a little boy, 3-year-old boy, who they murdered, but also it brought out the fact that indeed there are such terrorist training camps on American soil, all over America. An FBI or agent talked about this, about how this is just one of countless numbers. And I say countless because in fact, they only can count a certain number of them because these training camps are in areas, are hidden or off the grid. And they're in places where they are the least likely to be found. And they are literally training people, mostly kids, but, or at least in this camp, it was 11 kids, and they are training them to perpetrate, ultimately, terror attacks. So the significance of this not only relates to this poor little murdered kid, which is a very, very sad story, but it also relates to the fact that we should kind of like wake up and realize that there are these places all over America. There are these surreptitious, these hidden camps that we kind of have to be on the lookout for. Now, actually, the FBI had been aware of this camp for some amount of time, but they didn't go into it. They didn't, actually, it was months at least, but they didn't raid it. And it only became raided, and it wasn't by the FBI, it was by the local police in New Mexico, when there was this suspicion of the lost or kidnapped little boy being in the camp. So let me tell you about the woman, and as I'm talking to you about this, now realize she was the leader. And she was married, a polygamous marriage, to the man, the father of the little boy who was killed. So think about how this woman, who has now been found mentally unfit to stand trial, was leading, you know, influencing, manipulating the father of the little boy and the other people who came with her to form this compound. And so basically they were following someone who was mentally ill to form this compound in the Mexican desert, New Mexican desert. So her name again was Janie or Janie, from Haiti, it would be French, Janie Levi. I don't know how she would have, perhaps the American pronunciation would have been different. But anyhow, so Chief U.S. District Court Judge William Johnson in Albuquerque is the one who ordered her to be hospitalized after he found her mentally unfit to stand trial. And there was a hearing in October this month, and he found that she suffers from a mental disease or defect, those are the legal words, rendering her unable to understand the charges she faces, court proceedings related to her charges, and incapable in assisting in her defense. Those are the criteria for someone to be found mentally unfit to stand trial. So in other words, they have to be able to understand the charges that they're facing, the court proceedings, so they have to know who the judge is, who their attorney is, you know, what their functions are, witnesses, you know, they have to understand what a trial is all about. And also they have to be capable of assisting their attorney in their defense. So apparently Ms. LeVay was found not fit to stand trial. She didn't meet the criteria of understanding all of these things. Now, she's an undocumented immigrant from Haiti. She's going to be hospitalized for a maximum of 4 months. And then if the doctors think that she could eventually become competent to stand trial, they will continue to hospitalize her and treat her for an additional reasonable period of time. And she could also be made to take medication to help her become competent, medication to treat her mental illness to help her become competent. You know, different states have different laws about that in regard to just how much treatment someone can receive in order to make them competent. You know, there's their defense attorneys. I mean, it's different in different cases in different states, but there's the question of, you know, does the person want to become competent to stand trial if they're going to be likely to be found guilty? Or some people do want to be found competent. And then there's differences in how much treatment they can get. Now, this, as I was saying, the child, she convinced the father of the child and the other people, but particularly the father, that the child was possessed by evil spirits and that they should take him away and take him off medication, take the child off medication and do this exorcism. And they gave him daily religious rituals like exorcisms. And during one of these rituals on Christmas Eve, 2017, shortly after the group arrived at their compound, he died during one of these rituals. Really, really sad. And an electronic journal that she wrote said she saw herself as a religious prophet for the group, and she believed that the little boy would be resurrected to instruct them on the government institutions they were to destroy. Now, as I'll talk about, she convinced the man, you know, her husband, who was already married to a different woman, to leave his wife. And in fact, what he did was he told his wife that he was taking their little boy to the park. And in fact, he never came back, and he went with his second wife to New Mexico to make this terrorist training camp. Now, if you look at this from a purely psychological viewpoint, there's another way of looking at it that relates to custody and relates to jealousy. You know, this little boy was the only connection, the only child that he had with his first wife and the only connection to his first wife. I mean, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to realize that that might have been a second, besides, you know, her psychotic ideas, hallucinations, delusions and all that. You know, there's a reason that for everybody, there are reasons for having having delusions and hallucinations. I mean, they're not random. They come from your unconscious feelings and desires and thoughts. Anyhow, I will go into what her unconscious feelings and desires and thoughts might well have been, and the kidnapping of this little child and the terrorist training camp when we come back. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about Jeannie Levay, the French pronunciation of her name, since she comes from Haiti, the woman who was the leader of the group of five who absconded to the New Mexico desert to create a terrorist training camp where they were teaching little kids, three to teenagers, how to become terrorists and how to perpetrate school shootings and shootings at government buildings and so on. And so let me finish telling you about her before I go back and remind you of the depth of the tragedy of this camp and these people and what they did. So she's, as I was saying, she has been found unfit to stand trial. The trial is going to be set now. There's always, can always be delayed, but it's set now to be in April of 2020 for the five people who were involved in this fiasco. And she was, this little boy belonged this woman is facing kidnapping, firearms, and terrorism-related charges. And in terms of her mental illness, she told the group, I mean, she became the leader, which is, you know, she became the leader of the group, and she told the group that giving this little boy who had a seizure disorder and other kinds of medical problems, medication was against the group's Muslim beliefs. And she said that she was a prophet, and she and her husband, polygamist, Siraj Wahaj, were training these children for future attacks on, as I said, schools, law enforcement agencies, and other institutions. Now, when she was found unfit, just now, they didn't put a diagnosis down, but her symptoms certainly seemed like schizophrenia. She was charged with possessing a firearm while living in the country illegally. Dun, dun, dun. And the other suspects have been accused of conspiring to provide her with firearms and ammunition, amongst other charges. Now, she kept a journal, as I was saying, and in her journal, she talked about, the journal must have been a petri dish of examples of her psychotic thinking. She described being able to interpret messages from God, and that's a typical schizophrenic symptom, hearing messages from God. And she documented the death of this three-year-old little boy who she had denied medication for his seizures. Now, a year ago, when they, you know, this camp was first raided in August 2018, so when they rescued the children in the camp, her two teenage sons talked about how she expected this little three-year-old boy, the son of her husband's other first wife, that currently still married, they were still married at the time that they these she was having apparently a long-term affair with him as well. He was married to his first wife for 15 years, and she said she missed all the red flags of his having this other wife, apparently, and also the red flags, most importantly, of his planning to kidnap their little boy. Now, this woman, the mother of the little boy, she hadn't been able to have children. And when the little boy was born, it was like a miracle. And even though the little boy had various medical problems, she, to her, he was perfect and she loved him. And of course, this was, you know, this was an incredible tragedy. So let's see. So her two teenage sons told the FBI how she expected this little boy to be resurrected as Jesus and provide instruction on how to get rid of institutions that involve teachers, law enforcement, and banks. And her teenage boys had, you know, been amongst the other children who had all been trained in military tactics at a firing range on the property of their compound. Now, this whole thing of, you know, interpreting messages from God, the three-year-old child would become Jesus, these are all typical kinds of symptoms of schizophrenia. Although it makes me wonder, you know, it might be schizoaffective schizophrenia, which has sort of a combination between manic depressive illness and schizophrenia, because some of these things can be, you know, are somewhat manic. But anyhow, I was mentioning before about whether it's people with schizophrenia or people with manic depressive illness, anybody who had, those are the two major psychoses, anybody who has hallucinations and or delusions, they are not random. They relate to feelings that the person is actually having and thoughts that they're having. And as an example, I'll tell you about this schizophrenic woman who was having her first signs of schizophrenia were that she started hearing a voice, and the voice was of a young man, and who she sort of related it to maybe this man at work who she had a crush on. And she had just broken up with her boyfriend. She and her boyfriend had just broken up. And so she was lonely. And she admitted when I was talking to her about this, that yes, indeed, had this voice was filling her loneliness for a man, for a boyfriend. So as I was originally saying, the woman leader of the group, who's now been found mentally unfit to stand trial, clearly would have wanted, perhaps unconsciously, perhaps consciously, would have wanted to get rid of this little boy because he was, as I said, the only connection with her husband's first marriage. You know, again, they were still married when he absconded with the boy. And so getting rid of the little boy would be a way to make sure that he would sever ties, or hope that he would sever ties with his first wife. And particularly if she got him and the others to go to the desert in New Mexico. So she wanted to get rid of the little boy, and she and her husband would now have their own new life. Very, very sad. So going back to talking about this original story, which started in August 2018, to remind you of this, this was a story of the man, the father. The story came about because the mother of the little boy, when the father took the little boy and said he was going to the park and then disappeared, she couldn't reach him, she alerted authorities and they started a hunt for the little boy. And they weren't finding him. And eventually they found that these five people who, these five adults living with these 11 children, the adults were Suraj Wahaj, 40, he's the father, a little boy, Lucas Morton, 40, who is one of a husband of one of the other women, Jenny LeVay, as I was the one who was just found incompetent to stand trial, Hujra Wahaj is 38, and Subhana Wahaj, those two are sisters, and their brother is Suraj Wahaj, and their father is an imam in Brooklyn. I mean, you know, if this was a movie, it would seem like too contrived, right? But anyhow, and this imam has a very questionable past. And when we come back, I will tell you more about him and this original story, this original discovery of the camp. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where I am now going to revisit the story of the terrorist training camp that was found in the desert of New Mexico. It started with the boy's mother, the three-year-old boy's mother who lives in Georgia. She last saw him in Georgia. She last saw him in November, when that's when his father said he was going to take him to the park and then absconded with him. So that was November. Then she filed for divorce in December. And then an arrest warrant for him was not issued until January. Now, the boy's name is Abdul Ghani. And interestingly, this was an interesting twist to the story. So the mother was having all this trouble finding her husband and finding her son. And then 2 weeks after the father absconded with Abdul Ghani, he had a car accident. He flipped a Ford Explorer on Interstate 65 in Alabama. And the police, you know, did a report on him, and there was a five-year-old boy in the car, and Janie LeVay, she comes into the story again, they were taken to a hospital. But apparently she got well enough to continue on to New Mexico, where they founded this terrorist training camp. There were six other children in the car, ranging in age from 3 to 15. So presumably one of them was Abdul Ghani. Now, when they ultimately raided the camp, they found, as I said, 11 children, and 9 of these 11 children were the children of Suraj Wahaj and his wife, Jenny LeVay. And now, so those two, Suraj Jr. and his new wife, Jenny, were apparently very busy having 9 children while he was still married to his first wife, who didn't have a clue. But they still, you know, obviously they didn't stop them from continuing on to New Mexico and building the compound. Now, the imam senior, Suraj Wahaj Senior, the Brooklyn imam, is saying that he's the one who led the police to the compound, because he said that a plea came through Facebook that said, "We need food, we're starving." And his daughter had sent the message to a man in Atlanta who passed it on to him. And so then the senior, the imam, said, "What do I do? Find out where to send the food." You know, that was his brilliant move. And so when he found out where to send the food, that's how he was able to share the location with the police. And that's how they were able to raid the compound. 9 of these children were the imam's biological grandchildren, presumably those from his son and his son's second wife. But when the police raided, I'm sure you remember this, when the police raided the compound, they did not find the 3-year-old boy because he was buried. He was already buried. the imam said that he hadn't spoken to his son since late 2017, and he hadn't heard from his two daughters who were with the son in months. And he said these three kids of his had cut ties with the rest of the family. And he was finding this whole thing strange. But the thing is that he has a rather checkered past. The father does, because he was born Jeffrey Curse, not Siraj Wahaj. And he was found to be an unindicted co-conspirator in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. So he has quite a checkered past himself, like father, like son, I guess one could say. And then, let me see, what else? This story is just really fascinating. There probably will be a movie of it. It's too dramatic to not have a movie. And then, let's see. Oh, yes. The imam, when the Taos county sheriff apparently said that his son's religious beliefs were extreme, you know, extremist Muslim beliefs, extremist radical beliefs, and so on, he said he didn't like that. The father, the imam, didn't like that. He said his son's behavior could be extreme, and he described him as high strung, the kind of person who might become angry or who became angry when stopped at the airport by immigration officers. So that's a little bit of an interesting clue. And one kind of wonders whether he is suffering from some kind of mental illness as well, or was at the very least vulnerable to what his second wife wanted to do. You know, he was seduced by her in the first place to have an affair with her, or marry her, actually, in the Muslim tradition, or what is it they say, a certain interpretation of Islam, where it allows polygamy. So what happened was, you probably have seen pictures of what the compound looked like. It was all encircled with tires, you know, as a barrier, like a fort. And it was squalid, third world conditions. They were living in total squalor. Apparently they didn't have very much food. I mean, it was hard to get food because that meant they would have to go out into society, which meant that they could be traced back to their compound, which may be how, it's not clear really how the FBI had them in their sights, and why the FBI didn't raid. It had to be the local police. So now when they first came to court, we're talking in August 2018, when they were first arrested, when the raid happened and they were arrested and they were put in jail, a judge dismissed some of the charges against two different judges dismissed charges against all five of the adults. Because the prosecution, the state, violated the state's 10-day rule. There's apparently in New Mexico a 10-day limit for an evidentiary hearing to establish probable cause. And it is beyond my comprehension that in such an important case like this, the prosecutors couldn't get it together in 10 days to establish probable cause, and these hearings were dismissed. However, there were charges levied against them, against Siraj Wahaj and Janie LeVay for the death of the little boy, the three-year-old boy. The 11 children that they found were taken into custody of state child welfare workers, And then 3 days when they originally, as I said, when they originally invaded the compound, the little three-year-old boy wasn't found because he was already buried. But then when they, you know, continued searching, they went back 3 days later and then they found the child's remains. And it turned out that one of the other children had told the authorities that this little child was killed and buried, or however they put it, died and buried. Not sure just how much they threw the parents under the, well, the father actually, and Jenny under the bus, but they let the authorities know that there was another child and he was buried. They presumably probably told them where he was buried because it was a pretty big compound to dig up. So that is the story. That is the current status of the story. And then they were charged, the father and LaVey were charged with abuse of a child, resulting in the death of a child, and conspiracy to commit abuse of a child. Now, the others are charged apparently with something still. I think it's the trial is going to be of all five of them. They presumably found more things to charge them with, but it could have been, this story could have been even more tragic if all five were let go. So what does this tell you? I mean, first of all, it tells you to, it just shows you sort of the power that this one woman had to convince four other people to go along with what she was saying, which, yes, you know, does kind of put into question the mental stability of these four other people. Maybe the sisters were, you know, maybe, she, I mean, what probably happened is that she was able to manipulate her husband, who then was able to manipulate on her behalf his two sisters and the husband of one of them to flee to New Mexico. I mean, granted, this was not, I doubt this was like a new idea to set up a terrorist training camp. I mean, they may not have wanted to kill the little boy. The other three people may not have wanted to kill the little boy, but the idea of having extremist beliefs and setting up a terrorist training camp was not something new that this woman just instilled in them. I mean, they were obviously very interested in that concept, doing that themselves, whether she, it was, you know, she mentioned it first or whoever mentioned it. I mean, the father, you know, the imam obviously was an influence as well. So all of these influences resulted in this compound. And again, I'll leave you with the thought, how many compounds are there all over America similar to this? Well, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism4kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.